It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today is Peyton Schumann. Peyton is with Texas Southwestern Cattle Raisers and will join us in a moment. First off, Stephen Vaden with USDA, addressing members of the Senate Ag Committee on Reorganization.
The Secretary's memorandum was the first step, not the final step. It was essentially the green flag, not the checkered flag. And so now what we're entered into is a 30-day statutorily required period, having given notice to you of our intentions to reorganize the department, to hear from you. As Senator Hoeven noted, he's coming to meet with me later today, and I thank him, actually, since I'm spending some time up here today with him, for him coming down to see me in my office in the Witten Building. And I'll be happy to meet with other members of this committee who have similar concerns, ideas, efficiencies that they want to share with us so we can make our plan better.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Peyton Schumann. Peyton is with the Texas Southwestern Cattle Raisers Association, TSCRA. Peyton, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, if you think that's a long name, you know, then you add in my name. So I'm Peyton Schumann. I'm the Senior Director of Government Relations for the Texas and Southwestern Cattle Raisers Association. And thanks so much for having me on today.
Who is TSCRA? And then tell us about your path to get there. Did it start on a farm or a ranch?
Yeah, yes, sir. So TSCRA, we're a 148-year-old trade association, and we're actually Texas's oldest and largest livestock association. We were formed in 1877 by a group of cattlemen that came together. They were tired of having their cattle stolen and rustled. And so, you know, funny enough for your viewers out there, we still deal with a lot of that. And so today, TSRA still employs about 30 special rangers that still investigate agriculture theft and agriculture, you know, laws that are being broken, et cetera. And so that's a really big portion of the industry or our association still. We represent approximately 28,000 individuals and businesses as members that contribute to the production of beef and the stewardship of natural resources in Texas and the Southwest. Since then, you know, we've still got our special rangers, but then the office that I'm in, the government relations office, we are housed here in Austin. We do work at the state legislature and then also in D.C. And so this is kind of another way that we can, you know, give back to our membership and keep our fingers on the pulse of things that are going on that our producers need to know about in Washington and Austin here in Texas. As far as myself, I grew up a ranch kid. I grew up on a ranch outside of Coleman, Texas. My dad is a cutting horse trainer or was. And then we were the ranch foremen for a ranch out there. Since then, we've kind of gotten out of the cutting horse business, but now my dad is in the stocker business. And so definitely have always had a passion for, you know, livestock, agriculture, kind of the ranching cowboy way of life. And then a proud Coleman Blue Cat. Graduated from Coleman High School, and then I'm a proud Texas Tech Red Raider as well. And so after leaving Texas Tech, I actually worked in the Texas State Capitol for Senator Lois Kolkhorst, and then kind of, you know, made my way through the channels until I got to TSCRA.
Whether we're talking cow-calf or stocker operations, the herd's been pretty decimated due to the drought we had a few years ago. But where would you put us right now as far as just the state of the industry?
Yeah, yes, sir. And so to get the viewers most accurate, I was able to pull some things. And so just so everybody knows that the current status of the cattle industry, especially, you know, looking here in Texas, as of January the 1st of this year, Texas had 12.2 million cattle and calves, marking a 2% increase year over year. So about 200,000 more head compared to January 2024. That total represents 14% of the entire U.S. herd, affirming Texas remains the top cattle producing state. U.S. herd totals were 86.7 million head, but those were, as you were saying, down 1% nationally, continuing a general decline over recent years. For Texas, our cow inventory, we've got about 4.75 million cows and heifers that have calved, up 2%. Beef cows numbered about 4.8 million, or 4.08 million, up 1%. Milk cows around 675%. The 2024 Texas calf crop reached approximately 4.35 million, up 2%. And, you know, kind of what you alluded to, while that matters, is that, you know, national cow inventories have hit historic lows in early 2025, and it's the smallest since 1951. Again, you alluded to it, but rising drought, we've got higher input costs now. And then a weakened export access have contributed to tighter supplies and elevated beef prices about by over 8% year to date.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today, Peyton Schumann, Texas Southwestern Cattle Raisers Association. All right, Peyton, we've shut the southern border for Mexican feeders. New World Screwworm, you're watching it?
I joke when I tell people that I talk about New World Screwworm enough and probably enough in my sleep that I think that my wife could probably get on here and give just as good of an interview as I'm doing. So, you know, that to say that, yes, sir, it is on our mind. It is something we are daily talking about. Within TSCRA, we've got our Cattle Health and Well-Being Committee. An offshoot of that, we had a fever tick subcommittee, but we felt the New World Screwworm and other emerging pests such as Asian longhorn tick, et cetera, that are, you know, becoming prevalent enough. And again, especially, I don't want to take the emphasis off New World Screwworm. That's right now probably the number one issue that we're working on in D.C. and here in Austin, that we formed the cattle parasite subcommittee so that we could really, you know, keep up to date. We've got some amazing producers from across the state in South Texas that sit on that subcommittee. And in my opinion, some of the, you know, finest ranchers and producers out there that definitely helped me. And so, you know, all that to say, yes, sir, the New World Screwworm is definitely probably the number one issue on our docket these days.
Let's stay on New World Screwworm right now, because this is one that seems to be front and center for the entire industry nationwide. A recent coalition coming together. What can you tell us about that?
Yes, sir. So TSCRA and other, some other associations, you kind of alluded to one, the Texas Cattle Feeders Association, Texas Farm Bureau, East Foundation. I'm not, you know, I can't list them all, but there's 13 livestock, wildlife, Texas Wildlife Associations. You know, there's livestock, wildlife, dairy, poultry, landowner groups that have all come together, 13 of us, to form the Screwworm Coalition of Texas that was launched in May. And then yesterday, hopefully some people that follow either us or some of these other groups in Texas or wherever you're at, it may be seen some of the media on that. But we now we rolled out a website yesterday that we hope to be a place where producers can come and they know that from these trusted associations that they can get the most current and up to date information anytime that they need. I mean, I'm sure, you know, you and a lot of y'all's viewers out there have seen there's been a lot of misinformation in the media and just some stories that might be a little wrong. And so we wanted to have a place that would be a one-stop shop for people to come and get the most up-to-date and accurate information. Because I don't know, you know, other parts of the country, but in Texas, you know, those morning time cafe sit-downs with people, especially in a small town like Coleman, a lot of people talk. And so we want to make sure that when people are sitting around having their coffee, that they've got the most up-to-date information when they're talking about this. And so if any of your viewers out there are interested, you can visit that website. It is screwwormtx, agribusinessreport.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest, Peyton Schumann, Texas Southwestern Cattle Raisers. All right, Peyton, earlier you mentioned myths, New World screwworm. What are they?
So I'd say the number one and one that I've kind of seen perpetuated is that that with Secretary Rawlins' announcement a few months ago at Moore Air Field Base, that that is going to be a production facility for the sterile insect technique, which, by the way, our Screwworm Coalition of Texas, those 13 groups, we are all firmly behind and agree that the sterile insect technique is not an outdated or is a technology that is outdated in any way. We believe that that is the way to combat this the most effectively. The problem is, though, you know, the COPEG facility in Panama is the only facility in the entire world that is producing sterile flies, and they're only being able to do about 100, 110 million a week. And so first, I'd say the biggest one is, again, people are getting confused. And what is going on at Moore Airfield right now that that Secretary Rawlins announced is that it will be a distribution site for now. And so what that essentially means is that if and when the, you know, if the screwworm does get into the U.S. or closer than it already is, that COPEG will send those sterile flies up here, and they send them in pupa form, pupae, that have been radiated to sterilize them. They will come to Moore, and there they will hatch them out into the flies that then will be loaded onto the planes to be dispersed. There's been some claims that this is a production facility, and I just, you know, I'd really like to get that out there that that is not what's happening. We are actively pushing for domestic sterile fly production in the U.S. We would love to see that, you know, in Texas at Moore or possibly somewhere else, but we feel that the sterile insect technique is the way to do this. It's just we do not have that production capacity just yet. That is only at COPEG. And again, this, what they're doing at Moore right now is setting it up to be able to disperse those flies. And then two, you know, I got an email the other day that somebody thought that they had a case in a New World screwworm case in the Big Bend area. We were able to dispel that. As far as we know, and I think the last update was about July the 7th, so earlier this month, it is, we do know that the screwworm has been detected as close as 360, 370 miles from our southern border. What's particularly troubling with that is that we've been told that this is the first case. It was in a calf. It's the first case that they can say is a native New World screwworm, meaning that a lot of the cases in Mexico and how it got into Mexico is from illegal importation, illegal movement, different things like that. So it was brought in from, you know, South America. Where they are, you know, they've got the screwworm issue pretty much year round and have for decades. And that was, you know, those first cases were brought in to Mexico, but this is the first case that they are now saying that, you know, this was actually a native population now that has taken hold in Mexico. And why that's troubling is that, you know, we've learned that through surveillance and stuff in Mexico, we are not getting a lot of surveillance we're not getting any surveillance numbers on wildlife. And I think that that's, you know, troubling because, you know, in the 60s in Texas, 80% of our white-tailed deer population was decimated. And now fast forward, our white-tailed deer population and wildlife population in general is just, you know, exploded. And then you've also got the Neal guy in South Texas that has been brought in since the 60s, and they have a much larger home range than a white-tailed deer, meaning, you know, it's very easy for them to hop over into Mexico and come back. And so, you know, that's something that, you know, you kind of mentioned the border closure early, that we've been very supportive of Secretary Rawlins, because until we can get Mexico to come to the table and help us out a little bit more, especially on the surveillance, you know, we just feel that there's some things that need to be done there so that we can have a good working relationship.
Learn more online at tscra.org. Peyton Schumann, our special guest today with Texas Southwestern Cattle Raisers on the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Nebraska Senator Deb Fisher with Stephen Vaden of USDA.
What thought have you given to address any outstanding facility improvements that may be needed at these research centers? What commitment do you have to these centers in the future?
Well, the budget is a number that Congress gives us. And obviously, for every dollar that we save, that gives us the opportunity, if Congress allows us, to reallocate those funds toward facilities we intend to keep. So I'm excited about the fact that the Secretary's plan calls for us to save at least $2.2 billion by ditching these National Capital Region facilities that are out of date and in disrepair. And we're happy to work with the Congress if, as a result of those savings, there are other facilities that you think are worthy of investment with those monies.